Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The times, they are a-changing. That might be an understatement of biblical proportions. When you look at Vermont, I've never been, but I've heard Vermont is a state, Pamela, somewhere up in the northeastern part.
Brilliant, my friend, brilliant.
Have I got that? Is the capital Montpelier?
Sounds about right to me.
Let's go with that. If it's not, by the way, you probably didn't know either, so just run with it. But yesterday, Vermont voters were voting in their gubernatorial, their governor's primary, and they nominated, the Democratic side nominated a transgender woman, believed to be the first transgender nominee for governor ever.
Witness what happened in Vermont, where Christine Hallquist got the most votes, became the first transgender candidate to win a nomination in a governor's race.
Okay, Vermont, wow. Pretty progressive.
I'll give you that.
So this is a first. And so, hey, Bruce, happy days are here again.
That we seems kind of fast.
We love everybody, right?
I think it was just
we're
like,
accepting.
Yeah, but it seems like it was just like a year or two ago we were learning about Caitlyn Jenner and, you know, kind of having these conversations. And so I guess I look at it and say, yeah, I guess we're okay with that now. And transgender, we've moved on. And it's just no.
I wish that were the case, but it's not. You're going to have progress that is made in those areas. And I think that that's what you're seeing in Vermont. Okay. I call it progress. I'm sure there are others out there that call it something else. But I want to take you to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Oklahoma, I think it's safe to say that the trans woman there would not have won the nominee for governor.
That's
why do I say
safe.
That?
Por qué?
Well, because there's a story, a sickening story, in my opinion, of adults behaving badly, parents behaving badly. They would not accept this kind of behavior from their very own children, but yet it is the way that they are behaving that shut down schools. Yes, the parents and their comments on a Facebook page shut down schools in Oklahoma.
It has to do with a 12-year-old girl, transgender 12-year-old girl, Jamie Crenshaw, and this...
That's the parent. No.
Oh, I apologize.
That's the parent who's behaving badly.
The parent. I apologize. We don't know the name of the child, which is understandable. That the 12-year-old transgender was... Which bathroom they were. You were back to the bathroom argument.
Right. So this parent who's behaving badly posted on the school Facebook page for like the parents group, like a resource for parents.
Yeah, this is like where the PTA, they talk about who's bringing cupcakes.
Public. Everybody can see it. So obviously Jamie, mom here, felt it was comfortable to say this. Heads up, parents of 5th through 7th grade girls. The transgender is already using the girls' bathroom. We've been told how the school has gone above and beyond to make sure he has his own restroom, yet he is still using the girls'. Really? Looks like it's going to be a long year. We have made school board meetings over the situation last year, but nothing seems to have changed. This is the same kid that got in trouble as soon as he transferred 2 years ago for looking over the stalls in the girls' bathroom. Enough is enough. Parents responded. Can I read these?
Some of them, no.
I don't think I can.
But these are adults attacking a 12-year-old transgendered girl.
This is terrible. Y'all have great kids and a little half-baked bleep is causing them problems. We feel for y'all. Another. This is public stuff. I won't read the other part of it, but pretty much it says, if he wants to be a female, let's make him a female.
Yeah. A sharp knife will do the trick. I think we've at least tried. I feel on a certain level that when you explain the bathroom issue, it's a non-issue. Have you heard this argument before? If a transgender girl, so born as a boy, transgender, identifying as a female, uses the women's bathroom. I don't hang out in women's bathrooms, But I've been told that there are a bunch of stalls.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to know what's going on inside the stall that you're in. Vice versa. If you are a girl, transition boy, you won't be able to use the urinals. We have these stand-up urinals. You might have seen pictures of them, Pamela.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the heads up there, man.
And you would be forced to use one of the stalls. So the idea that you're somehow exposing yourself or it defeats.
Peeking over the stalls is weird. I don't know if that truly happened. But when parents go on to say, why are parents letting their kids be transgender? Why are parents letting their kids be transgender? Another, just tell the kids to kick his butt in the bathroom. He won't want to come back. These are parents. If your child behaved like this on social media, the school would be calling that child in and that child would be reprimanded. We teach our children not to behave this way. But yet when parents behave that way, what do you do? I understand that people are uncomfortable. Okay, I get it. The bathroom issue is not an issue for me. Mm-hmm. When we get into like the gym locker rooms, that's where I get a little uncomfortable.
Okay.
Because
you're
changing.
You're acknowledging I might be uncomfortable about it. I understand there's solutions to it. You're not attacking a 12-year-old in a public forum. And basically, the parents are the ones doing the bullying. I don't think the kids care nearly as much.
I just am amazed at how cruel and horrifying the response of these parents are, so much so that the schools, under the advice of law enforcement, there were two elementary schools under the advice of law enforcement, shut their schools down for 2 days. Parents behaving badly took away two instructional days from their children where they're supposed to be going and being educated.
Well, if you think about it, and I have my goddaughters who told me at their high school there were multiple transgendered students. And I asked them, I tried to make it as open-ended as possible, and you know, Uncle Bruce has no skin in this game. Does it make them uncomfortable? Is there an issue with bathrooms? Is the other? And they looked at me like I had a third eye. They're like, no, it's no big deal. I go, really? You know, do you transgender? They go, yeah. And? Like, I don't think the kids freak out over this. I don't think they associate it with anything negative. Listen, it's probably difficult enough. There's going to be always bullies. It's probably difficult enough being transgender in middle of nowhere Oklahoma and the kind of slings and arrows you might get from other 12-year-olds, but it pales in comparison to what the parents are doing.
Right. I mean, this 12-year-old's mom says that, you know, this was the first day of school, and the daughter, who usually uses the staff bathroom, got a bit confused on the first day and went into the girls' restroom instead. Now, here's
so they were trying to kind of play by the rules. They were trying to make it work.
There is no justification for you as an adult to threaten a child. Really, in all honesty, Bruce, if you take a look.
We need to get out and introduce you to some of these folks in Oklahoma.
Well, no, I don't want to be introduced to them. This isn't my circle of people.
They feel decidedly justified.
No, I don't surround myself with these types of people. I refuse to. But in essence, what you've got when you go through these comments that parents were making is they're planning a hate crime.
They're threatening assault. They're threatening mutilation. They were threatening to kill this transgendered child.
And again, this is a public forum, a resource set up by the school
for parents to
communicate.
They put a billboard up about it. Absolutely. They're not afraid of it. No. They stand by it. They believe it. They're horrible human beings. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not defending them. They are as scum could be. You got no problem telling it to their face either. It's not my fault you're scum. It comes from
while,
parents are probably scummy too.
We take one step forward in Vermont, where you have the first transgender nominee for governor. And then we take two steps backwards in Oklahoma, where you have parents threatening a child, in threatening mutilation of a child.
Yeah. Not the other students.
Right.
The parents.
Oh, the students would have been suspended, kicked out of school.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to the parents?
Yeah. You can publicly shame them, but in that community, they're probably the majority. Is the resume dead? When's the last time you updated your resume? I turn around and say, when's the last time that you got a job based off of a resume? Is the resume dead?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I'm going to take you back in the way back machine. Like back into the 1900s, Pamela, they actually had courses. You would have college courses on like how to do a resume. You would have workshops on how to properly put together an impressive resume, what to put on it, what to leave off of it, how to put it together so that when your resume landed on the desk of a manager or somebody doing the hiring, why you... We're going to get the gig.
You stood out. Yeah. You wanted to make it into the potential yes pile.
Short stack.
Yeah. And not the one that goes into
circular
the
circular round file.
You know
file.
What?
Yes.
We're going to hold on to your resume if we have an opening in the future.
We'll let you know.
Yeah.
Don't call
exactly.
us.
So the resume, I got to admit, I haven't had to put one together for well over a decade. I've been very blessed in that sense. But when I started seeing a conversation take place about the resume and is it dead, it got me thinking to back to some of the professional conversations and meetings that I have been in over the years. And I got to take you back probably about 8-9 years. And as the interim news director here of KTIR, I was sitting down with some other news directors in the Valley, and we were helping students at the Cronkite University with, you know, how to get into the business and giving them some expert advice. And there was a local news director who wanted to know what the kid's website was. What's your website?
Okay.
Send me the link to your website.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Like, interesting. I never thought of it that way. You know, usually in media, you're like, you got your resume and you got your tape. I call it a tape. It's usually something different than that, but that's just kind of like the standard. I'm like, okay, well, you know, in creative fields, that makes sense. In creative fields like broadcasting, you or like digital marketing or web development.
Your resume is your body of work.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense to have like a one-stop shop online where employers can kind of poke through and like check out the projects.
If you were hiring a digital graphic artist, you wouldn't
want
to read their resume of where they graduated. Show me your work.
But what we're finding out is that it's now jumping over just the creative industries into more, you know, traditional industries where your online profile, predominantly they took a look at LinkedIn.
Yeah, which is, yeah. Right.
And that's where a lot of recruiters are just checking out those platforms first for applicants.
Well, I thought this number, and again, just to reiterate it, the resume went from being roughly 30 to 40% of the hiring process to less than 10% today. And I know we work in a semi-creative field, but I worked in management as well, which is shocking, I realize, for a lot of people. And some people are still recovering from it.
Yep.
Whatever. Some people liked it.
They're still laying on the couch getting therapy over that, right?
Yeah, well, you know, you toughen up, Buttercup. I was not a big resume person. I always had to have a resume like for the file, for the personnel file and the EOE file, like when people do it. So I would collect them, but I can't remember ever hiring someone based on their resume. I hired people based on, like you said, their body of work. In my world, it might be, we call them an air check. Let me hear what you sound like on the radio.
Your tape, yeah.
Or a marketing director. I would go, give me some examples of
campaigns.
Wonderful campaigns and marketing campaigns you've done or promotions that you've done. Because I would hire people outside of just being on the radio. But for me, it was always a show your work, not show me a piece of paper that says you can do it. Show me what you have done.
Yeah, but I think it's but I think it's a lot easier now to show that.
Okay.
Whereas 10, 20 years ago, what are you going to do? Are you going to bring in the life-size poster you created to show the boss?
So
now,
people still put resumes together because I think you're supposed to, but you should just know that most people aren't looking at them.
Well, but I mean, I think that the resume has now moved from that piece of paper that you have in a document filed on your laptop.
I'm going to update my LinkedIn account.
Yeah, but that's what you do.
Yeah,
it's more of a LinkedIn where you go and you can change things all the time and you can update them all the time. And then
you can add things to it.
Right, exactly. So resumes, apparently they're not cutting them anymore.
Jobs that exist today didn't exist yesterday. So how would a resume, how would a piece of paper truly show the skill sets that this generation has in a way that could actually unlock a job? It's impossible.
Isn't that interesting, though?
Well, think about this. How did it before? Play along with me. I don't disagree with that statement. But we were making hiring decisions before by looking at a piece of paper. Nothing changed. The piece of paper didn't change. We were making value judgments on a potential employee's hireability and what they brought based on a piece of paper because we didn't have access to that body of work. I would argue you're making smarter decisions today, but we were still making decisions off the piece of paper.
Oh, of course, but I think
we had no idea.
What he's saying is, you know, the jobs of today are very different than the jobs of 10 years ago. And the way that you compete for the jobs of today is not the way you competed for the jobs 10 years ago.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Okay, yeah. I don't know if this is good, bad, or in the middle. I've never got a job by submitting a resume. Every job I've gotten, including this one, was somebody reached out to me and asked me, would I be interested in this job? I'll give you the names and numbers of the idiots that hired me here at another time, okay? I don't want to throw them under the bus right now. But at some point, oh, they will be held to account. Yesterday, we talked about strict football coaches, possibly overly strict, the University of Maryland and what's going on there. A player died, a revolt amongst the team. What about positive coaching? There's an organization out there that's teaching coaches and players how to respond to positive things, not just screaming, yelling, and carrying on. We'll talk about it next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Yesterday, Pamela, we had the chance to talk to former NFL player, two-time Super Bowl champ, left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Max Starks. A huge man, by the way, when he's here in the building. I always say it takes me three steps just to walk around him. And we talked about coaching at a collegiate level and at a professional level because of the story that came out of the University of Maryland, where the entire coaching staff, a majority of the coaching staff, was suspended for what appeared to be, I thought, that's how you were a coach.
A culture of abuse. Yeah. And some of the things that this coach and the staff were accused of, you know, yelling and screaming and making the players work hard. And you're going, well, isn't that what football coaching is about?
What we learned along the way was just a culture of humiliation, verbal abuse, and questioning players' masculinity, and just several instances and anecdotes after anecdote about how these players were put in positions to go beyond what they were physically capable of doing.
So is there another way of doing it?
Yeah.
Instead of yelling, screaming, berating, belittling players, is there another way to go about getting the most out of someone?
Joining us right now in the KTAR studio is Tamara Clark. And Tamara is a partnership manager for the Positive Coaching Alliance, the PCA. Now, I became aware of this because this is tied to the Tomey family. Richard Tomey, son Dick Tomey, former U of A football coach. And this is, I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about Positive Coaching Alliance, because as I understand it, it's the 180-degree opposite of what was going on at the University of Maryland.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
First off, thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
We're super excited that we are able to share a little bit about what PCA does, especially in regards to the horrificness that came out of Maryland. What we do, a lot of people think that we are a happy, everybody wins, everybody gets a trophy type of organization. And that's not at all what we do. We just help promote that there is a better way to get athletes to perform to their top by being a positive influence in their lives, not just you belittling them or yelling at them or cussing at them, not any way doing that, but there's definitely a different way to do it. And that's what we teach. We do workshops to help not only the coaches be better, but also the parents and athletes.
Okay.
So, you know, this, I'm all for this. It sounds great. If you listen to the show at all, you know, I believe in building people up, not tearing them down. But I've never played football. And even when, you know, I've heard Max Starks talk yesterday and others here in this building that have played football at a professional level, I mean, at the highest level, you know, at some point in time, a boy has got to be made into a man. And a lot of the ways that we perceive that to happen is by tearing them down and building them back up. So how do you do that differently through the Positive Coaching Alliance.
So absolutely. And I'm from Texas, so I come from a football state. So yeah. I absolutely get that whole concept of, you know, the tough coach gets the most out of them. But what our studies have shown is that you can actually get more out of your athletes by being a influencer in their life, not just a what we call a win-at-all-cost coach. So the win-at-all-cost coach is your strict coach that thinks that instilling fear and, you know, intimidation in athletes.
Players are terrified of them.
Correct. And they're going to perform at their best. When really, all they want is somebody to coach them not only through their sport, but through their life. So a little statistic that we use a lot is 70% of athletes actually drop out of sports by the time they're 13. And the number one reason is because they're not having fun.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with their coaches.
Yeah.
But their parents as well. Their parents get a lot involved.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. We've had plenty of stories about parents behaving badly on sidelines.
Yeah. It's bad. So we actually use that to our advantage and come into those schools and really.
So you talk about, you know, helping coaches develop this positive coaching through the alliance here. And how do you do that with parents, though?
So just a little background on our coach. So we do have a double goal coach is what we call them. So, again, we don't just focus on everybody wants a trophy. It's our whole purpose of a double goal coach is winning and teaching life lessons.
Okay.
So winning is absolutely important, but it's how you win and how you handle the situations when you don't win and how to make certain decisions. So with the parent, we call them a second goal parent. So their only goal is teaching those life lessons. So all too often, parents think they know more than the coach.
Yes. Yeah.
Or they think they know more
than
the ref.
Blocking schemes and exactly. Pitch counts. Yes.
Exactly. And I mean, it's awesome that parents want to be so involved in their kids in sports, but ultimately, it can be very hindering to the athlete to where they don't want to play anymore.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And Pamela and I, both a friend of ours, Bertrand Berry, who played for the Cardinals and also played at the University of Notre Dame. And he played for Coach Lou Holtz, who's a legendary coach. And I said, you know, I was interested. I mean, it was just a side. What was it like to play for Coach Holtz? He called him his second dad. He said, yeah. He goes, this is the man who, other than my father, made the largest impact on my life as a man, not a football player,
yeah.
As a man, as a person. And I was like, well, now that to me would be the measure of a great coach. Now, he happened to win a lot of football games along the way, but he positively impacted the people
around
him.
But is that why he won a lot of
right.
football
games? Right. Like, so, chicken and egg.
Yeah,
I don't
so
know.
We always ask coaches whenever we go to a coach's workshop, what would you rather have on your team? A team full of kids who are giving you 100% effort or a team full of 100% talent? And surprisingly, there's a shocking amount that hesitate to raise for the effort.
Mm.
When reality, I mean, teams that win a lot, I just had one of my trainers use the example, the Dodgers are stacked to win. The
yeah.
Rams are stacked to win. But are they going to win? It's not all about the talent on the team. It's about who's going to put forth the more effort. And how do you handle getting that effort from the kids? And that's what we teach coaches.
We're talking to Tamara Clark. Wow. She is a partnership manager for Positive Coaching Alliance. We're talking about what's taken place at the University of Maryland. The coaching staff there has been, you know, put on leave because of a culture of abuse. I
yeah.
think it's really interesting that we also have the ASU football coach, Herm Edwards, who is sitting on your national advisory board. So I think that, like, that shows the difference in his coaching mentality versus other college coaches. I know he was at a professional level as well,
yeah.
but he's got a very different mentality than some other big name coaches out there.
Absolutely. And if you ever get a chance to actually meet Herm Edwards, everything he speaks and preaches on is who he is as a person.
He seems very genuine.
He is. And we actually just had a huge event back in June, and him and Dick Tomey were our speakers, and they share the same coaching philosophy. So it's really cool to see that two coaches from almost, you know, essentially two different generations have the same coaching philosophy, and they're both successful. And I can't wait to see, honestly, what Herm Edwards does with ASU this year. Like,
Tamara,
careful.
I want to know.
I'm a U of A guy. I'm neither. Okay.
So,
hey, Tamara, real quick, though, I know that there are parents listening right
yeah.
now that you really struck a nerve with. Where can they go as parents to find out more and participate?
Absolutely. So you can always go to www.pca. _Arizona.org, and we are absolutely happy to help you out in any way that you can.
We're going to tweet
we
that out for
it.
Folks
we already have
as
it
well
up.
At Bruce and Pamela so that you can get that information
and I'm happy
involved.
To leave a business card that you guys can share
thank
with
you.
As well.
Awesome. Thank you so
excited.
Much.
Thank you for having me.
Outstanding, Tamara. The positive parent, the positive coach, and I think you have to almost come back to why are kids, young adults playing sports to begin with, work backwards from there. To be berated and broke down as humans, I haven't heard a lot of people say, well, that was our goal. Yeah, that's what we tried to do. Yeah. Hey, I know it's Wednesday, but there's a movie coming out today, and it's a different movie, and it's got a really interesting story behind it. Crazy Rich Asians. I've seen it. We're going to talk about it, but also talk about the story behind the film. Coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Bruce tells you what you need to see and what you can most definitely skip at the theater this week. It's Bruce St. James.
I don't normally do movies on Wednesday, but this movie's actually opening up today.
Is that unusual?
Sometimes they open early to get like a run. A lot of times there's holiday weekends where they open on a Wednesday to try to get the run from it. Yeah, but it's a little bit unusual. But you know what? There's a lot of things about this movie that make it unusual. We are going to talk about basically a romantic comedy. Okay, that's what genre it fills in. It fits in, but it's a lot more than that. It's called Crazy Rich Asians.
March. We've been dating for over a year now, and I think it's about time people met my beautiful girlfriend. Don't you want to meet my family?
I hardly know anything about them. Every time I bring them up, Nick changes the subject.
Maybe his parents are poor and he has to send them money. I'll take a bag and get you checked into first class.
Nick, we can't afford this.
So your family is rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
I've seen this movie advertised and, oh, okay, and a lot of stories written up about it. But I honestly, Bruce, I don't know much about it and what all the buzz is about.
And it's a unique buzz. And believe me, I had to learn about it, too. It's based on a book, Crazy Rich Asians, apparently. Again, they use an international bestseller. The story's not unusual, you know.
Boy meets girl
takes him home to meet parents. He is
something other than
she doesn't know his whole background. Okay. Learns it, you know. Duck out of water. You know, she doesn't quite fit in because she's not a billionaire like
fish
they are. You know, so that's the thing. But what is unique about this is that this is the first studio film in 25 years with an all Asian cast. As a matter of fact, the director, the crew, most of the crew, this is a Asian-centric film. This explains it a little.
Come to Singapore.
It's been 25 years since the studios released a movie with an all-Asian cast, and while Hollywood is trying to do better when it comes to diversity, Crazy Rich Asians star Constance Wu tells us diversity is great, but representation is what really matters.
Representation is actually centering the narrative in a person of color's story so that you understand and explore what makes them different and special.
So here's one of the things that I don't want to detract from it. Let's talk about the movie first, okay? Crazy Rich Asians, you would be, if you didn't know the whole cast, you meant Constance Wu, Henry Golding, you recognize some of the characters in there. I want to say that this is a really good movie, leaving all of the Asian part out of it. As a romantic comedy, it is a tremendously well-done movie.
So the movie itself is good. What I would expect
the
movie with the book
is
being
good.
A hit.
Yeah, well, okay. But not every 50 Shades of Grey. Not every book turns into a great movie.
You and I disagree there.
Yeah. But this is a really good film. Unlike a lot of romantic comedies where you see couples on a screen and you're like, I'm not really.
The chemistry.
There's genuine chemistry. There is genuine emotion in this. And it is a well-told, very good story. So let's just say Crazy Rich Asians as a film is a good movie on the 1 to 5 scale. I gave it a 4.
Okay.
And I'm hardly the romantic.
So
I'm not the target audience for the romantic comedy.
Entertaining, history, diversity aside, it's a good movie.
It is interesting. And I almost wonder if the all-Asian cast and the Asian director, if it almost detracts from it, because my argument is it's not a novelty. Do you know what I'm saying?
No.
The fact that it is an all-Asian cast and it's an Asian director is a sidebar to the fact that it's just a really good movie.
Do you think that aspect of it is getting too much attention that's overshadowing the quality of the film itself?
Well, here's what I would say. I wouldn't want people to think that because you're Asian, you wouldn't get it. It wouldn't be good. You wouldn't enjoy it. Again, I think it's secondary. It's almost like you didn't have to be Black or African-American to enjoy Black Panther. It was a really good movie. It happened to have a black cast. It's a really good movie. Like, it's almost like we got to the point where, when is that going to stop being a thing? When do we have to stop saying, oh, it's got an Asian cast or it's got a black lead? This is just a really good movie. And I understand why they're marketing it and why they're talking about it.
It hasn't happened in 25 years.
And the novelty of that, I wouldn't want the novelty to dissuade you from seeing this, because I just think it's a really good movie.
Okay. What did you give it again?
4 out of 5. And for a romantic comedy, I mean,
rom-com.
Are you kidding me? You got to go away to get above one out of me on a romantic
comedy. I like to laugh.
Comedy.
We can all laugh right
now.
Yeah,
it's got funny parts to it. It's got some genuine culture clash parts.
Yeah, I don't want anything serious.
Learned things about it.
You learned?
I want to visit Singapore.
You did
now.
Some learning in this?
I want to visit Singapore after seeing this movie. Looks like a place I want to go. Crazy Rich Asians. All right. Apparently, there's plenty of them out there. Have you ever even thought you'd have to escape from a hospital? Did you ever think a hospital could keep you or a loved one against their will? Yeah, we're going to tell you that story, and it's coming up next on Arizona's News Station, 92.3 FM.